The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
Old woman!
Man!
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw him?
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, May the 8th, 2024. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's just right.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Has anyone accused you of being far right recently? If so, good for you. If not, what are you waiting for? Get out there and do the right thing. Every week this program begins with the warning, not right wing, just right. And this is not just a slogan or a marketing pitch, although it is both of those. But more to the point, it's about the philosophical principles on which this show is based. The principles of individualism and freedom, which are to be found exclusively on the right of the political polarity. And this is not merely my own assertion. And the world is slowly awakening to that political reality, even as it resists accepting it. When those on the right fail to acknowledge this political alignment and choose to run away or meekly defend themselves against being labeled far right or extreme right, they are pretty much handing political victory to the left. So, not right wing, just right. We've been using that opening introduction since the very first broadcast of Just Right back in 2007. And you know what? I honestly cannot recall a single instance in which I or this show have ever been accused of being far right or extreme right. So we're going to go total binary on you today in our continuing effort to get the people on the right to embrace, not fear or be ashamed of, being labeled far right. And the browbeating begins right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave. Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. And financial support is also what will help alleviate our show's recent growing pains, as our site expands and our shortwave audiences have been fluctuating. Regular listeners may have noticed that over the past several weeks, we've been announcing our shortwave radio carriers a bit differently each week. We were briefly absent from Channel 292 for a few weeks, and this past January we briefly appeared on WTWW Shortwave thanks to the kind invitation of Bob Bierman, host of Truth to Ponder and the pastor of Trinity Chapel in the U.S. That show aired Saturday nights on WTWW 5085 kHz, while WBCQ at 7490 kHz airs on Wednesday evenings, and Channel 292 at 6070 kHz airs on Thursdays. After producing a handful of Saturday editions of Just Right for WTWW, on January 19th, Bob Bierman wrote to let us know that, quote, "Last night I learned that the recent freezing weather caused severe damage at WTWW. I know for the station this event was unexpected and quite a hit to the operation. It is doubtful it can be repaired anytime soon, but I will let you know when things change," end quote. And of course, other unexpected interruptions to the production and distribution of this show would have to include my own brief absence during my hospitalization last November. And of course, there's always a constant threat from Trudeau and Biden's fascist governments that threatens our very existence and works to keep our show off the various social media. So we have to do everything we can to maintain our independence. Robert Vaughn recently reminded me that we have some rather large bills coming due later this summer, primarily to maintain our growing archive online and increasing costs in services. So I thought this might be a good opportunity to encourage those of you able to do so to make a financial donation to our cause that is Just Right. And a cause indeed Just Right is. Robert and I have never drawn a cent from any donations to Just Right, which are used exclusively to expand our audience and sphere of influence. And why do we do this? Because we believe that there are simply no other shows or programming out there, whether in the mainstream or alternate media, that do what this show does. That is to provide an epistemological grounding to politics, an understanding that took us decades to acquire, and which is critical to the survival of freedom and capitalism, which are attributes of the right. Our experience in the field of politics is truly unique and extends back decades. And in the hopes of shining a light in the right direction and of preventing others from making the same mistakes and errors we made over the years, we've been offering the benefit of our experiences through these radio broadcasts and podcasts. Here are some quick facts about Just Right. Beginning with the fact that thanks to our donors, every broadcast is available to the world for free. Each presentation is divided in four parts, which we refer to as quarters, but which are never exact quarters in terms of time. Sometimes one of the quarters can be 25 minutes long, while another is just 2 to 5 minutes long. It all depends on the subject and material involved. And we have no ads embedded in our broadcasts. What we have instead are various audio bites carefully selected each week to complement our own message or topic of the day. But the audio bites we feature serve many purposes. One, to frame the show with its unique identity and signature. And we have a formula. Every broadcast, with very rare exceptions, opens with some expression of drama, generally taken from a TV show or movie, and as we like to say, every show closes with a smile. During the course of a given broadcast, anything goes. Two, to provide some level of information or expertise that we lack. Three, to offer counterpoints to our own. Four, to offer evidence or demonstrations of some point or principle that we are discussing. Five, to entertain. Six, to draw opinions and ideas from television and movie sources. And when our show opens with, quote, the views expressed on this program are those of the participants, end quote, that includes any views expressed in these audio bite selections, whether they're from movies or TV shows. And one key cultural factor that is missing on the right is its lack of representation in the arts and entertainment category. In a political environment that operates almost exclusively on narratives, aesthetics becomes as important as the principles themselves. 7. We do not repeat audio bites on differing shows. We try to avoid that because, on average, each episode contains 8 separate audio bites, and they're labeled with the letters A to H on our clips and credit pages, which accompany each blog post. Now, after 859 episodes, that totals approximately 6,872 audio bites, and I would estimate that out of that number, we would have less than a dozen duplicates used in differing shows, and many of them would appear in a different context, or be shorter or longer than its other duplicate. And given that this is the age of the podcast, we can keep every episode of Just Right perpetually available on our site. And I know there are those of you who collect these broadcasts. And that's one of the reasons that we didn't want listeners to be confronted with rerun audio bites throughout the series. Just Right has been designed to be a long-term resource, not simply a current events newscast. Each episode has an intrinsic value that far transcends the current events of the day. And by the way, in this regard, be aware that not every broadcast of Just Right has a blog post to go along with it, especially those episodes in our earliest years of broadcasting. But you can access every episode from a single HTML page by clicking on the Every Episode button on the homepage of Just Right. All of the links on that page go directly to the MP3 associated with the identified topic, and you can click on them and listen, or click on them to download them into your own collection. And you know, I'm a bit embarrassed to admit that I haven't checked our online stats for this show for over 2.5 years, but in the year ending December 31st, 2021, our site received over 500,000 visits, and 6.1 terabytes of audio shows were downloaded. And given its philosophical nature, bear in mind this show does not boast a large audience, just a very influential and exclusive one. The number of our current weekly email updates is just approaching 1,000. And of course, none of this includes our video productions or our shortwave audience numbers, which can only be estimated at best. And I know that this might sound as if I'm working against my own interests, but in addition to encouraging your donations to Just Right, I'd like to encourage everyone to do their own blogging and posting online to influence those in their sphere of influence. The more voices, the better. And you don't have to have a large audience to have a large effect. And with that in mind, here's a sobering perspective about the numbers, as summarized by Bill Whittle back in 2022.
Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle, and I am the Invisible Man. My videos have been viewed about 100 million times. Now, up until recently, I thought 100 million views is not a bad number. If you assume 10 minutes per video, that adds up to 16.6 million people hours. But YouTube streams 1 billion hours of content every day. In other words, if you were to put together a playlist of every video streamed on YouTube in one 24-hour period, it would only take you 114,155 years of nonstop viewing to get through it. Every single view that I've gotten in 14 years comes down to 1.6% of what YouTube does in one single day. I'm an invisible man, and I'm not the only one.
We are all the invisible men if we have unrealistic expectations regarding statistics and audience numbers. In terms of the world population, and even just national populations, even the top-rated broadcasters and podcasters, like Tucker Carlson, Alex Jones, and Donald Trump himself, are quote-unquote invisible men. But their influence is felt nevertheless in ways that, to the inexperienced, are often imperceptible. And how do we know this? Just look at the desperate censorship tactics being used by various governments in their attempts to silence alternative media in the information war that is currently raging. So, now, to kick off our discussion about why being far right is just right, Let us begin with a terrific speech given in Australia on March 19th, featuring Konstantin Kissin, a Russian-British satirist, author, and co-host of the Trigonometry podcast. And he was speaking on the topic of why the West is best, and why the West is losing its cultural base of individualism and freedom.
I just thought I would touch very briefly on a subject, which is, of course, the West. Now, I'm not an academic. I always say I claim zero expertise, but as long as people keep asking my opinion, I'll keep giving it. But the reason I care about it, actually, there's several people here who were like me, born in the Soviet Union, is I've seen the other side, albeit briefly, and I'm aware that what we have in the West is unusual. But what is the West? Millions of people are crossing the southern border of the United States illegally every year and risking their lives dealing with Mexican drug cartels and all sorts of terrible things that happen to them on the way to get into the United States. Tens of thousands of people risk their lives by getting on small boats to cross the English Channel every year to get into the UK illegally. Likewise with the Mediterranean. Now, why is that? Why are people coming? Why do people want to come to our societies as I once did? The reason people want to come to our societies is that they're better. Sorry, they are. And I don't mean that we have a higher moral value or we are somehow morally superior. I just mean that people come to our societies because they're better at creating the sorts of things that human beings seem to want. Safety, prosperity, the ability to change your gender every morning, you know, things like that. Now, why are our societies better at creating these things? Why? Why are societies better at doing this? Freedom. Very good, sir. You've watched too many Hollywood movies. Any other ideas? Someone say democracy. Good. Democracy. Good. Why are societies better at creating safety and prosperity? Now, there are some answers, because if you say freedom and democracy, you have to explain why those things are good. Why is freedom good? Why is democracy good? These are just words. And the things that we mean by them don't really correlate to the outcomes of safety and prosperity. We have to be able to explain what the link is between those things and the things that people actually crave. Because there are not many people who get on a boat in search of freedom and democracy. Most people are coming because the societies are safer and more prosperous. Now, why is that? Well, what do we mean by democracy exactly? It's not always been democracy in the Western world, but what we mean is government by consent. The fact that our leaders are answerable to us in a way that they're not in almost every other society. Now, our model of government by consent means that our leaders are unable to put themselves in this bubble. And if they do, reality strikes them in the face very, very quickly. But it's not. I'm not just talking about politics. The idea of government by consent is the reason that our armies fight better, because the soldier on the ground is able to pass information up the chain of command in a way that he might not be in an army that is much more hierarchical and authoritarian. Government by consent is one of the reasons that we have been able to be as successful as we are. Now, the second reason that I think is the bedrock of our success is something that we're practicing right here, right now, which is, of course, freedom of expression. Now, again, we talk about freedom of expression as if it's some kind of moral good, right? It's good. It's just good. Freedom of expression. Yeah, it's good. Why? Why is it good? Why is the ability to speak freely good? We have to be able to answer this question if we are to teach our children the values of our civilization, and if we're to explain to them why they should actually care about these things, because just saying from the height of our authority, these things are good, is not enough. Now, why is freedom of expression good? Well, the first thing is that you cannot think freely if you cannot speak. You have to speak to be able to think. And when you speak, you often find out whether what you're saying is complete crap. Because someone will tell you. And that's basically Twitter in a nutshell, right? And it is this sharpening of idea against idea that has produced the technological and scientific progress that we've been able to make. Now, my experience is that when I go around the West and I speak to people like you about this, people in the West do not understand the extent of our technological and scientific superiority through not only today, but through the ages. Go back to history. I mean, we talk often about colonialism, right? Hernan Cortes arrives in Central America and he takes down an empire of 6 million Aztecs with a few hundred conquistadors and some local allies. That is the level of technological superiority that we enjoy. And that is the reason why Western nations dominate the world. And there have been times when that hasn't been true. Now, how do you get from freedom to progress? Well, one of the reasons is, of course, that we have been much freer comparatively from the dogma of religion, from the dogma of authoritarian government, from the dogma of social and societal orthodoxy is probably the right word, to be able to do things that other people in other societies have not, because we've had the freedom to do so. Now, let's be clear, I'm not by any means suggesting that we have some kind of monopoly on innovation. Gunpowder is invented in China. And almost every development in the history of firearms, from the musket to the automatic rifle to the cruise missile, is then made in the West. But freedom of expression and freedom of research and freedom of science is not enough. The thing that really makes this work is we have a unique incentive structure in the West. Charlie Munger, the great investor who passed away recently, he said that show me the incentive and I'll show you the outcome. We have created an incentive structure that is unique around the world. And people, again, in the West, forgive me, do not understand what the hell I'm talking about. Somebody, when I asked why we're successful, mentioned the rule of law and private property. Now, you don't understand this, most of you, but private property does not exist in the rest of the world. The richest man in Russia was Mikhail Khodorkovsky. He was the richest man in Russia for as long as he didn't give money to opposition parties in Russia. The moment he did, he ceased being the richest man in Russia, and he went to prison for 10 years. Jack Ma, the sixth richest man in China, makes some comments about banking regulation of all things, disappears, and is thoroughly re-educated. Bao Fan disappears a year ago, one of the richest men in China again, reappears a few weeks ago, changed man again, miraculously gives up all his position in his own company, right? You do not have private property in most of the rest of the world. Now, why does it matter? Well, one of the reasons it matters is if everything you create can be taken away from you by an authoritarian tyrant, the incentive is not to innovate. The incentive is to comply. And the fact that the way you succeed in our societies is by creating things and providing things of value to other people is the way you get ahead. And that's why we are innovators like we are. In the Soviet Union, where I grew up, it was not innovation or creativity that got you ahead. It was compliance with the party dogma, serving the elite that existed at the time, a very small one. And this is, of course, the same in corrupt regimes around the world. In a corrupt country where there's a strong authoritarian caste, you're not going to advance by being creative and free. You're going to advance by doing whatever the hell you need to do to get on the right side of those people and facilitate the corruption that's happening in your society. So, freedom of expression, capitalism, a dirty word now, and government by consent are three of the major reasons we are where we are. But we no longer have the language or the ability to articulate these things, which is why I wrote in my book that I think the West has become a cargo cult. Now, I know that many of you in this room will know what I mean in this neck of the woods, but some of you will not, so let me remind you. During World War II, the Americans and the Japanese used many islands, small islands in the Pacific, to station troops, use them as airstrips, supply dumps, etc., ammo dumps, etc. And when they were using these small islands, there were some local tribes, fairly primitive tribes technologically, that lived there too, who benefited massively from the Japanese and the Americans giving them food, clothing, medicine, etc., to get their compliance. And they watched this for years. The planes would land, drop off supplies, take off, and then they watched all this process, and they benefited massively from the clothes, the medicine, the food, etc. And then the war ended, and the Americans and Japanese left, and they took their clothes and their supplies and their medicines, and the tribes that lived there were lost. What do you do? Well, what they did is they started to imitate what they'd seen. They would make headphones out of coconuts. They would march up and down fake airstrips like they'd seen the American soldiers do. They would build towers, radio towers, out of bamboo and sit in them expecting the planes to come back. And this is what we increasingly do. We imitate the things that made us successful instead of practicing them. That is why the West, in my opinion, is in great peril, or at least has the potential to end up in great peril, because we no longer are able to articulate these values to ourselves, and we're not longer able to articulate them to our children. We now have two or three generations of people who have not been taught any of the things that we've just discussed. Instead, they've been taught about the evils of our society, and our history is terrible. And I always say to these people, "What? Who are you comparing us to? What, you think the Ottomans were woke? Is that what? Look at Russia, the biggest country on the map. How do you think it became as big as it did?" Right. So we have allowed ourselves to be lied to about our history. And that is one of the reasons that we are where we are. Now, whenever you bring up any of these arguments, people will say, "Oh, you're just a culture warrior." Right. Okay, I am just a culture warrior, because I actually happen to think our culture is the reason we are where we are. And I think our culture is worth protecting, our culture is worth defending, and our culture is worth remembering. Our culture is worth understanding how we got here. Thank you very much.
It was a profound and brilliant observation to point out that most people in the West are no longer able to articulate their values. That's the very phenomenon with which this show grapples every week. Most Westerners, and particularly those on the right, unfortunately, lack both the vocabulary and proper definitions to articulate their values, and this is not by accident or omission. The left has been hard at work destroying the very concepts and definitions necessary to articulate the values of freedom and capitalism. Because in the information war, as in any war, it's define or be defined. And here's what I've been seeing over the years. While the left defines, the right allows itself to be defined, to the absurd point where most on the right accept the ludicrous notion that the utterly and totally collectivist leftist ideology of fascism and its variants are quote-unquote right-wing, or far-right, or extreme-right. It's ridiculous. Once the right accepts that, then the war is already lost. Not only has the right lost the intellectual, ideological, and political war, but the right has lost its own identity as well. Those on the right are no longer able to articulate anything positive about being on the right or about the values and principles of the right. It never ceases to amaze me how so many conservatives and others on the right cower in shame when someone accuses them of being racist. When the idea of race and racism is only possible to the mind of the left. Instead of defending themselves against unjust accusations of racism, they should point out that Hitler and the Nazis were on the left, not on the right, and that the Democratic Party in the U.S. has always been a party of racism, slavery, and the Ku Klux Klan. And oh, by the way, the right represents freedom and capitalism and individualism. Problem solved. Or at least defined. And while I fully agree that what makes the West work is its unique incentive structure, the real cause of that unique incentive structure that requires articulation is the institution of private property rights. Kissin's description of the West as a cargo cult was for me also a brilliant and ideal metaphor describing many conservatives who are always being perceived as being on the right, of course, but who pay lip service to values like freedom, freedom of speech, and democracy, and then vote for conservative political parties that openly define themselves as progressive, which means socialist. As in Ontario's Progressive Conservative Party. It's a party in power, not because it is conservative, but because it is progressive, the ideology of the left. That's what the left wants, and that's what the progressive conservatives are giving them. Now, before moving on, While we've devoted several entire broadcasts to the left-right polarity, let's just do a quick review of a few of the key fundamentals of each polarity, so that at least most of us will have some idea of the differences being cited here. For example, the left operates on the primacy of consciousness. The right operates on the primacy of existence. The left represents all forms of collectivism under which all identities and rights accrue to some imagined and arbitrary group, group rights. The right represents individualism, under which individual rights supersede state powers. Only those on the left are capable of being racist, sexist, or prejudiced against people in other collectives, particularly religious ones, because they think in terms of group identities and other collectivist notions. Those on the right, being individualists, are not even capable of thinking in terms of race, color, creed, gender, etc. To accuse them of any group-oriented prejudice or bias is a contradiction in terms. And when it comes to the use of physical force, mainly the force of law and the military and the police, the left uses physical force in an initiatory way. That is to say, they will resort to force and compliance rather than to persuasion and consent in order to get their way. The right uses physical force in a defensive and retaliatory way in order to defend life, liberty, and property and to pursue justice. On the left, the government is a player in the game of life. On the right, the government is just a referee. And just to be clear, freedom of expression, capitalism, government by consent are all exclusive properties of the right, in contrast to the left's censorship, socialism, communism, fascism, and government by force. In political terms, the words left and right represent the moral polarity of political action. The left is the evil, the right is the good. But because most people have been stripped of the knowledge of good and evil in politics, mostly by having those concepts redefined by the left, many on the right are now abandoning politics for the field of ethics and morality, which is the branch of philosophy one hierarchical category above politics. That's why we've been hearing so much about religion and the moral polarity of good and evil instead of the political polarity of left and right. But morality is limited to the actions of individuals. Politics concerns the actions of governments and the state. And you should never leave matters of the state to strictly religious solutions, as was explored in the controversy we featured on last week's show. Now, having heard Kissin's excellent analysis of the values of the West and the lack of general understanding to articulate them, I'm very disappointed to say that on the return side of our upcoming bumper, during a Joe Rogan interview with him and his trigonometry co-host Francis Foster, all of them ended up demonstrating their own inability to articulate the language of left and right. It was a train wreck. But first, on this side of the bumper, Carl Benjamin, in conversation with Heretics host Andrew Gold, offers some traditional history on the origins of left and right, while explaining how, as someone originally on the left, he is now about as far right as it gets. The awakening begins.
One thing you said is that the media is very left-wing. I'm hearing people listening saying, oh, hang on, Murdoch owns so much of it. And he, I know you said Daily Mail is a bit schizophrenic, but it's not a left-wing.
No, it's not. It's not a left-wing institution itself, but the Daily Mail is one paper.
The Sun, Fox News.
That's three.
So relatively, you'd say that the more...
Far more. There's far more on the left.
Left.
And it's normal. You know, it's just the way the media has been for a long time. It's hard to think of any impactful... I mean, the BBC recently had to do a reorganization within their own ranks because they admitted their own liberal bias. And it was like, okay, why would they have to do that? The BBC meant to be the bastion of neutrality in the country. It's like, yeah, actually, we're really liberal and we need to change that, and if we don't change that, we're going to continue to alienate ourselves and the British public, who actually aren't particularly liberal, who are actually really quite far right in a lot of ways. But those people don't get to have any representation. I always thought of myself as being left-wing, but I didn't know much about left-wing philosophy at the time, and the more I looked into it, the more I realized, oh, I'm not left-wing, and actually these people are crazy, and the world they're trying to bring into existence is probably going to be terrible, and so I think they should be stopped.
I lived in Argentina. This is when I started moving away from that And they've had right wing as well.
Yeah, South America has been very left wing for a long time.
It's like ingrained in them. And it's a weird thing, because even though they've got this like far right, they've had far right dictatorships, they go very left. And it's a different kind of left over there, because it's like a nationalistic left, which we don't get here. We associate nationalism with poppies and army and right wing and vigilante hunters for some reason. And on the that's just what they're all into. And on the left, not that kind of pride, it's actually, we hate this country. When I was younger, liberal meant left wing.
Yeah.
Now I'm hearing liberal about the right.
So the question of left and right comes from the French Assembly. But the question of left and right, the reason these things are left and right, is it was a question of, should the king have a veto over us? I can't remember what the topic was now, but it's actually kind of trivial. Mm-hmm. And should the king have a veto? And the people who didn't think so sat on the left, and the people who did think so sat on the right. And so basically this came to mean the forces of tradition versus the forces of progress. And so liberalism was on the very vanguard of the forces of progress until it got to a certain point at which people felt roughly that this was where we should be. And then it kept going. And it kept going. And so now there are the people who you would say are classical liberals, like Margaret Thatcher. Mm. She's a very liberal figure. Right? You can't end up with the phrase, there's no such thing as society, without being an extremely doctrinaire liberal. And she was what we'd call a neoliberal now. Big fan of Hayek and various other Austrian school economists. Deeply liberal in the way that she constructs the world. But she is now a right-wing figure. Because liberalism has continued to go to the left.
I see.
The forces of progress have gone on. And so now we're far beyond that. So Margaret Thatcher is now a far right figure. And it's like, that shows you how much further to the left things have gone.
You've been described by James Dellingpole as a leftist libertarian whose shtick is to question the received wisdoms of our time. Is there a way to convey to an audience what it is to question received wisdom without sounding red-pilled, peaked, woke?
I don't think I'm a leftist libertarian.
Yeah, I think it was a point I found on Wikipedia about lots of different people have called you different things across the spectrum.
Yeah, I have been called a lot of different things. I just call myself a traditionalist at this point. It's probably the furthest right you can go.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. But it's interesting what you're saying, because I think so many people I speak to about very similar things have been called right-wing as an insult and as a slur, and I can understand why one might want to sort of take ownership of that. Like, well, it's just, you know, it's no different to being left-wing except the other thing.
Isn't that interesting how the prejudice is to, oh, you're right-wing, as if that's an insult? It's like, well, what does that mean?
Well, people associate it with Hitler, because we learn more about Hitler than we do about
the
Stasi.
But Hitler was a socialist.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'm not even joking. He self-identified as a socialist. He ran a command economy. He had all sorts of abstract categoricals, and exactly the same way the socialists do.
This isn't ideological to them, it's the truth.
Yeah, exactly.
They have the truth, they know what it is, hashtag no debate.
Yeah.
Hashtag exactly. No point debating, no point discussing, we know what the truth is, and anyone who disagrees with us, they're far right.
Yeah. And what do we do with people who are far right?
Yeah.
Cancel them, put them in jail.
Cancel or put them in jail, or maybe we need a final solution, Joe. You know, there's this left-wing journalist, I'm not going to say the name, but her tweet made me laugh so much. She put out this tweet going, I am writing this tweet to apologise. On March the 13th, I called J.K. Rowling a Holocaust denier. It's just like...
Holocaust denier. Why did she call her that?
Because in her mind, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
If you say trans women aren't women... You to also say Auschwitz didn't happen.
And I feel so strongly about it as someone who lost relatives in the Holocaust. What they've done to those words, Holocaust denier, Nazi, far right, is abominable. It really is. What they have done to those words, the way they've diluted the meaning of these words that have very specific meanings, it's horrific. And it's, by the way, it's costing us now, because we can't have a genuine conversation about, like, some people are Holocaust deniers. Some people are actually supportive of those ideologies, right? And you have to be able to distinguish between that and someone who thinks trans women shouldn't be fighting in a cage with real women. And words, like, they have a meaning for a purpose so that we can have a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such an important point. And the worst bit is you have these people who are genuinely far right. They're terrifying. They have these awful views. And then when they're challenged, they go, I'm not far right because you've said this person is far right. That term doesn't mean anything. And you're like, you know what, Adolf? You've got a point, mate.
Yeah, it's a real problem because
that's going to get clipped, mate.
But far right people, dangerous far right people are real, just like dangerous far left people are real. And that's why being on this goofy team, left or right, is so stupid.
And I think the challenges that we're facing right now, we can't even agree what words mean.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And if we can't even agree with what words mean, how are we going to agree on something as difficult to solve as the Middle East and find a solution that not everybody is happy with, that everybody's prepared to accept? Because the reality is when you strike any deal, there needs to be a large dollop of pragmatism involved where you have to accept, I'm not going to get everything I want. And I've got to accept what I am happy with, what I can accept at that moment. And if you're not prepared to do that, and if you can't even agree on what words mean, and if you're in this kind of oppressed mindset, how are you going to come to any kind of agreement or solution?
The way we have the conversation about it is not intended to find a solution. Doing stuff is hard. Talking about shit is easy. Yeah. But you can have as many fucking protest marches as you want. It's not going to change anything.
Yeah.
And we saw that with Iraq. I protested against the war in Iraq. I was on the street.
It does add to the confusion that young people are experiencing. And this is why the ethos of self-improvement is so important.
100%.
Yeah, and why it also gets attached to right-wing ideology.
That's because you're taking responsibility, right? And for some reason, some people want to make the right the only place that's about personal responsibility. I don't think that's necessary.
That's ridiculous.
That's crazy. You can exercise and be left-wing, right-wing.
Of course.
You can take care of your family and be left-wing, right-wing.
Of course.
And people have always done that.
And I think that the people that aren't interested in that, both on left-wing and the right-wing, have the most problematic views. The people that have no interest in self-improvement, both on the right and on the left, they're the people that are the biggest problems.
Yeah, it's the people, the worst people are the people who are utterly entrenched in their views. And they think to themselves, you know what, I've got everything right. I don't need to change. Why do I need to improve? Why do I need to change the way I think? Because I am right.
Yeah.
Well, great. So what you've actually done is you've actually stunted your own growth. Emotionally, physically, spiritually.
Well, the good thing is I think that becomes evident over time. I think those people become exposed and it becomes very clear what they're doing over time.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. And so much of what we just heard is so wrong, I don't know where to begin. Rogan says that dangerous far-right people are real, just like dangerous far-left people are real. That's why being on this goofy team, left or right, is so stupid. What makes this a stupid statement is that there is no right, far or otherwise, in his equation. He's identified two parties as being dangerous when both of those parties are on the left. To the extent that a political polarity is dangerous, that implies that it represents tyranny and the use of coercion and force. That is an exclusive domain of the left. Rogan is obviously operating on the fake political spectrum that puts the leftist ideology of fascism on the right, and that's what's stupid here in this equation. And if you really believe that left and right are stupid polarities, then what can you possibly mean when you say, the worst part is these people who are genuinely far right, they have these awful views? Well, obviously, to be able to say that statement, you have to have some kind of notion of what far right means. What the hell are you talking about? Again, this undefined, awful views, quote-unquote, comment refers to fascism, which is on the left. I mean, if they understood that the right is individualism, freedom, and capitalism, to what awful views are these values attached? Kissin argued that doing stuff is hard and talking about stuff is easy. Well, I disagree entirely. It's the other way around. Doing stuff is easy, talking about stuff is hard, and he verified that by his own experience. He said you can protest all you want and it doesn't change anything. Well, protesting is doing stuff. And it does serve the function of networking and maybe creating some attention, but he's correct in saying it doesn't change anything. And the reason talking about stuff is hard, he again explained in his Australian speech. We no longer have the language or ability to articulate these things. That's the hard part. Learning about the correct language and acquiring the skill of articulate speech. Talking is a form of doing, not mere activity, but activity with purpose and an objective. And if you are using the correct definitions and concepts in your talking, it does change things. Words have a meaning for a purpose so we can have a conversation, says one of the panelists. But that's a secondary purpose to language and concepts. The primary purpose is to enable us to think. And it was also mentioned that, for some reason, some people want to make the right the only place that's about personal responsibility. Well, the reason is because it's true. Freedom and responsibility are inseparable. Tyranny and responsibility are utterly incompatible. And then Foster says, the worst people are those utterly entrenched in their views. They think to themselves, I've got everything right. I don't need to change. Why do I need to improve? Why do I need to change? Consider that this argument is based on the idea that there are no right answers, because to believe there are will make you one of the worst people around. Pleased to meet you. What if I know I'm right? Do I improve myself by changing my opinion? For example, I know without any doubt that I am male thanks to my physiology. How would entertaining the notion that I'm female be self-improvement? I also know that I am right about the nature of left and right as political polarities. I've come to this knowledge by way of education, observation, and experience. Everyone enters an argument or debate under the assumption that they are correct. Otherwise, there would be no debate or other differences. Now, of course, in the process of being right, one must recognize that the science is never settled. Being open to changing one's view is a far cry from having to entertain every other view you encounter. And when someone tells you the science is settled, what they're really telling you is not only that they're wrong, but that they are unable to rationally defend their position. It's clear that all three of the participants in the Rogan discussion have totally bought into the fake political spectrum that puts fascism on the right. And as a consequence, they'll never get it right and never find the direction to the truth. Now, on this side of our final bumper break, a far-right trilogy featuring a Jay Dyer interview with cartoonist Jim Bob, Count Dankula on having babies, and the X-22 report on Donald Trump's assessment of the political polarity. While on the return side of the bumper, Dr. Robert Malone on the Alex Jones Show of May 2nd explains the nature of globalism in a way that's just right.
All right, welcome to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of DaysAnalysis.com. Today I have one of my good buddies with me. He is a cartoonist. He is a satirist. He is an impressionist. He is an all-around funny and good guy. His name is Made by Jim Bob. He joins me today to discuss the culture war, to discuss some religious and philosophical topics, to discuss his art, to discuss his idea of satire. Let's talk about your journey. I think you had a journey out of kind of liberalism into reality, a real awakening. You got really woke and not fake woke. So let's talk about that first. What's your background and how were you? You were in this California woke scene, weren't you?
Yeah. I was in the California default liberal scene for 15 years. Little entertainment here and there, reality television. And then I started cartooning. And then I had voted for Obama. Yeah, throw the tomatoes at me. And then I started critiquing Barack Obama. That was the beginning of my political satirical cartoonist career. There's a famous video of him dropping the mic. He always did stuff like that. All I did is swap the mic with a bomb. And suddenly I realized the power of single image cartooning. And so from there, the more I pursued the truth, the further I went from liberalism and leftism. I stayed in the center for a little bit because that's our safety raft away from the sinking ship of the Democratic Party. And then eventually it sends you pretty far right, in my view. That's what happened with me. The more precise And the more rigorous I was with the truth, the further right I went.
The far right's campaign to explode the population, in other words, having babies, reproducing, carrying on your lineage, making sure that your DNA survives for thousands and thousands of years. The thing that's literally hard-coded into your firmware, because at the end of the day, we are monkeys with monkey brains, and we were literally born to f*** and then die. The basis of all existence for every single living creature on the planet, reproduce. That's what we're supposed to do. That's hard-coded into our firmware. That is who we are. That is what essentially makes us living entities that continue to survive. So you just called being human far right. You just called being human far right.
They are in trouble. They're in panic mode right now over the Gaza protests, because the D's are saying, if you keep this up, you're going to push all these people to the right now, because now they're looking at this and they're using common sense and saying this isn't right. And now they're panicking over all of this. Trump, he put this out on Truth, and said the following: this is a radical left revolution taking place in our country. Where is crooked Joe Biden? Where is Governor Newsom? The danger to our country is from the left, not from the right. And just think about what the D's just said. Oh, this is backfiring on us. Now we're having these people move to the right because they're using common sense. People now can see that it's the left that is the problem. Remember, they try to convince everyone it was the right. Oh, the Nazis, the white supremacists. But now the people, they see the truth.
I'd like to talk for just a moment about what is globalism. We hear this tossed around again and again about globalism and the threat of globalism. Functionally, the threat of globalism is that of central planning. What they propose is that public-private partnerships, transnational public-private partnerships, which meet the criteria of Benito Mussolini for the term fascism, will have the right to determine how the world should be run, what you should do, how you should live, what you should eat, whether or not you live in 15-minute cities, whether or not you're allowed to travel on airplanes, et cetera. And all of this is really global, controlled central planning. What is central planning? Have we seen examples of central planning before? Of course we have. The former Soviet Union. And I just come back from Romania under the dictator Ceausescu. There are many of these totalitarian dictatorships over time that we've seen that rely on central planning edicts. And what they do is they destroy cultures, they destroy people, they destroy their lives, they destroy productivity, they destroy innovation. This is the key thing that I want to get across here. Is the reason why to reject globalism and central planning is because it is the best way to prevent innovation. Central planning and global control will kill the ability of individuals and nation states to innovate, to adapt to changing conditions. This is part of a broader agenda that really is a death agenda when you think about it, from the perspective of human beings, is they're promoting death. They're promoting death in all kinds of different ways. And I argue we have to choose life. This is a death cult. And I think the West, a good case can be made that the West is behaving basically as a group of suicidal or a suicide pact. All of this negativity and very dark planning, self-blame, the dissolving of and rejection of culture, of religion, of ethics, of any standard moral principles, this is all very, very dark. And it is all part of this same initiative to drive towards what is believed to be some noble future in which one can upload one's consciousness onto the web, live forever. This, again, this is yet another example of narcissistic behavior on the part of certain individuals, particularly a globalist ruling class, to try to find a way to become immortal and to live forever in a digital reality that they will have made it played a key role in creating, and denying all the fundamentals of what make us human. That's where this death cult is going. I'm not really optimistic at this point from what I see. People think that this is a conspiracy theory, that this is overstated. No, we are in a war. We're in a war for your children, for your future, for your autonomy, for your ability to hold property. And we have to fight.
Inciting globalism's inability to innovate and adapt to changing conditions, Dr. Malone's message was a carbon copy of that presented earlier by Konstantin Kissin. But to hear Dr. Malone refer to this agenda as a death cult was rather haunting, given that Robert Vaughn and I have been using that exact term to describe the left for as long as I can recall. And it was not meant as a mere pejorative or hyperbolic criticism. We meant it literally, and still do. Given that we are in a war, as described by Robert Malone, many may see arguments and differences about left and right to be a total distraction relating to semantics. But not so. In the polarized environment of politics, the terms left and right are unavoidable, and one thing's for sure, the left doesn't consider them merely as a matter of semantics. Whether the words are left and right, or any other understood words like, say, male and female, remember that the left is constantly engaged in concept destruction, trying to make it impossible for individuals to think. It also makes it impossible to communicate between two differing groups using differing definitions for the same word and concept. And all of these conditions are the ideal breeding ground for leftist ideologies. What we need most is concept reconstruction and definition. That's the most powerful weapon in this war. So what would you do if someone labeled you far right? Hold your ground? Apologize for your principles? Run leftward? I think that the most powerful approach is to force your accuser to define his terms. The term far right is based on a so-called political spectrum that simply does not exist either in theory or practice. The values represented by the political labels of left and right do not exist in degree, but only in kind. Whereas the term far right implies that there are other types or degrees of right. So to demonstrate that principle, let me leave you with this question to consider. Is, say, freedom of speech, is that far right, close right, extreme right, moderate right, near right, never right, almost right, usually right, sometimes right? Or is it just right? Be sure to verify your chosen answer by joining us again next week when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Arrived here 3 years ago, still learning the language. English is a very difficult language. And you guys make English even more difficult than it should be. I don't know why. I saw the other day a person saying, don't call me he or she, call me they. And I was like, what the f***? It took me 3 years to learn I am, you are, he is, she is. Be whoever you want. This is a free country and this is amazing. But this whole gender neutral pronoun is confusing for me. You know, let me tell you a story. I invited a friend to have dinner at my house the other day. And he was like, oh, I'm bringing a friend. And I said, of course, bring him. And he was like, no, 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 no. Bring them. So I bought a lot of food. I bought briskets and pizzas and pastas. And my friend showed up at my house with one person. So I said, where are they? And he said, they are here. So you tell them that they're gonna eat all of this fucking food.